That's where we're going to be having the scripture reading this morning, Exodus 21, three verses starting in verse 12. Exodus 21, starting verse 12. I'm reading from the New American Standard. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. But if he did not lie in wait for him, but God let him fall into his hands, then I will appoint you a place to which he may flee. If, however, a man acts presumptuously towards his neighbor, so as to kill him craftily, you are to take him even from my altar that he may die.
Morning. It's good to see everyone in the house this morning. So we're going to continue in our study at this time of the Ten Commandments. And I kind of varied a little bit from the way I normally start things with Bible reading. I had Gary read a section of verses that is actually not in the Ten Commandments, but we'll talk about those verses in just a couple of minutes. The sixth commandment, as recorded in Exodus 20, in the New American Standard Version, Exodus 20 and verse 13, is, "You shall not murder." However, most people are most familiar with this command as it is worded in the King James Bible. And if you were to go someplace, and I realize these places are getting rarer and rarer in the United States, where the Ten Commandments might be carved like on a courthouse stone or something like that. Most people are familiar with the way it reads in the King James Bible, which is, "Thou shalt not kill." The Old American Standard reads the same way as the King James, but all modern translations read the way the New American Standard reads, "You shall do no murder." The King James rendering of this command has given rise to many issues that have been debated throughout church history. The use of the command, "Thou shalt not kill," to argue as a complete prohibition against the taking of human life, created an understanding of the command that led some to conclude that warfare was prohibited, that capital punishment was prohibited. This found its extreme practice, perhaps maybe in the Quaker sect, but there have been other people well known for groups for their pacifism. It's led to other critical issues of in terms of the Bible, because when you read "Thou shalt not kill," then critics and skeptics point to the number of times in the Bible that God violated his own command by ordering, for instance, King Saul to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, even their children. They say, how can a God that says "thou shalt not kill" turn around and say, "go kill these people"? So it's important that we properly understand the command and within the context of the entire scripture, that we avoid some of those issues. And so that's what we want to try to do for just a few minutes this morning. The Hebrew Old Testament uses 10 different words, 9 of which definitely deal with the taking of another human life, to describe the act of putting someone or something to death. And herein lies the problem. And we're not going to go into great detail on all of these words. They're just different Hebrew words. Try to pronounce them if you want to. But the King James Bible translates all 10 of these words by the English word "kill." So it doesn't distinguish at all whether these words have any difference in meaning. Now, I said 9 out of the 10 definitely deal with the taking of human life. This nekoth, which literally means to go around, is used in the book of Leviticus to describe sacrifices that happen on a regular basis. In other words, whenever that cycle goes around, then you do the sacrifice again. So it's definitely referring to animal sacrifice. The other nine are all used in the Old Testament in relationship to human beings, while they may also be used in reference to things like as animals that could also be killed. The word that is in Exodus 20 is the Hebrew word rotzach. And as you notice in the reading of the New American Standard Version, there it is translated by the English word murder. It's only used five times in all of the Old Testament. And if you compare that, for instance, to the word nakah, which is up there, which means despite, smite, that word is used over 90 times in the Old Testament. And so the point of that simply is that the word murder is not used that frequently in the Old Testament. In fact, every time it's used, it's in relationship to this command, you should do no murder. The Greek in the New Testament, and I didn't do a chart of this because we're really looking at it in the Old Testament this morning, doesn't have as many words for taking of life as the Hebrew, but it does have six. But the eight New Testament passages that quote this commandment uses the Greek word phanuro, which means murder, and it's the word that the Septuagint uses in Exodus 20 for this word. And so the idea here is that it is a narrowing, restrictive use of the English language that says kill as an absolute term, particularly in the Ten Commandments, against the taking of human life. The actual word is murder. And we'll talk more about that as we proceed this morning. The truth of the matter is that in the Old Testament, the condemnation of murder actually precedes the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament. In Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6, after the flood, as God is giving Noah a couple of instructions, and at that time it would only have been Noah and his family that had survived the flood, he says, "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man." Now, I would point out to you that this is broader than the command, "You shall do no murder," and we'll see its application in just a minute. But what he basically says is that if a man sheds another man's blood, that by the ordinance of God, that man's blood will be shed by another man. It actually does not use any of those words we had on the chart. The word "shed" there simply means pours out. And so pours out is a word, you know, there are intentional and unintentional verbs. If you spill something, you didn't mean to do it. If you pour it out, you meant to do it. And so what it's saying is, if a man means to pour out the blood of another person, then the penalty for that is that his own blood will be poured out. And so that is the first ordinance of God concerning the taking of human life. However, as Bible students, you know that murder existed long before that. It has existed since Cain killed his brother Abel, and God dealt with that by putting a curse upon Cain. And so the important thing is to look at the distinction that God has made in this passage. He prohibits one man on his own intentionally pouring out the blood of another, taking human life. But the penalty that he acts for that is the judicial taking of the murderer's life by men acting as God's agents for justice. So he said, if you pour it out, I authorize other men to pour your blood out as penalty for your taking of the human life. So from the giving of this command in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6 to the giving of the Ten Commandments, there is no additional mention in this in command form. So from Genesis 9 to Exodus 20, it's not mentioned in command form, but there are several references in the lives of the patriarchs to the reality of men breaking this commandment, or the fear of man breaking this commandment. Classic examples, Abraham, who told Sarah, tell them you're my sister. And when the reason's given, he was afraid that if they knew she was his wife, that she was so attractive, that the men would want her and they would kill him to get her. So the threat of murder was very real in the world from the time of Cain and Abel. So let's look at this sixth commandment and talk about the proper application of this commandment. As we said at the very beginning of this series of lessons, the Ten Commandments break into two large groups. The first group that we've finished studying are all related to what Jesus called the first great commandment. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. Beginning with this one, the rest of these commands have to do with you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So what we begin with, first of all, is to understand that this commandment is a prohibition of individual action, whether it's motivated by human self-will or some other human cause. It is a misappropriation of the passage, and those that argue for total pacifism and argue against capital punishment or argue that this kill is a general word that applies to any form of the taking of human life have simply misappropriated the passage, because it cannot be viewed as being in contradiction with other God-ordained acts such as national warfare, self-defense, or capital punishment. Now, I don't have the time, because these morning sessions are very short, to look at that in great detail. We'll point out to you that our modern laws follow the pattern of the Old Testament in that based upon the various aspects of the circumstances surrounding one man taking the life of another, human laws assign different penalties to the acts, whether they be defined as an accident that causes the life. But in our legal system, that accidental life is considered a matter of civil law. So a person who is negligent that leads to the death of another individual will not be tried in criminal court, but there could be a civil penalty. They get sued for wrongful death. And so a monetary penalty could be assigned in the case of even an accidental negligent death. But then going further, the law differentiates between manslaughter and murder, and various degrees of murder in our criminal system. And so a person could be guilty of the taking of human life, but that wasn't their intent. But what they were doing was criminal, so therefore it is manslaughter. And it has a penalty that goes with it. But then murder has its own penalty. So this is exactly what happened in the Old Testament. And this brings us to the passage that I had Gary read, which coincidentally happens, not coincidentally, right after the giving of the Ten Commandments. So immediately, God begins to clarify what does he mean by thou shalt not murder. And so when we look at this passage, we see that the sixth commandment prohibits murder, but then this clarification is added. And if you look at that passage that Brother Gary read for us, presumptuous, we would use the term premeditated. Somebody who plans an action against another individual to result in their death, that was punishable by death. That also, the Old Testament also includes what we could call conspiracy to commit murder as murder. One of the six times the word ratzach is used in the Old Testament is used in 1 Kings 21 and verse 19, where Jezebel is indicted by God for murdering Naboth. But Jezebel didn't lay her hands on Naboth. But if you remember the story, what she did is she maneuvered politically the political leaders of the town to falsely accuse him of rebellion against the king, and they executed him so that she could then take possession of his vineyard that her husband Ahab wanted and give that vineyard to him. And so in 1 Kings 21:19, the prophet tells her, "You murdered Naboth." And so the term murder does not have to apply directly to the person wielding the instrument of death. But if you plan, plot, or conceive of something intentionally designed to lead to death for your own purposes, that was considered murder under the law of Moses, and it was penalized by death. But if you notice in the passage here, the distinction is made between that premeditated act and other human acts that result in the death of another. You didn't lie in wait, but you got in a fight with a guy and killed him. You're still guilty of violating the command. You've murdered him. But there are extenuating circumstances, and God's going to make provision for that. So, those circumstances, if you notice, do not remove the potential penalty of Genesis 9 and verse 6. Because under the law of Moses, there was the individual known as the avenger of blood. And that was the closest relative to the person who had been killed. And under the law of Moses, that person can hunt down the killer and take their life, and he was guiltless of violation of the command, because this other individual had taken the life. So understand, the circumstances did not remove the potential death penalty, but they provided a judicial system that separated between the premeditated murder, which never resulted, was never to result in release from the penalty of death, and these other causes. And so in physical Israel, God established the cities of refuge where the individual guilty of taking human life but not guilty of premeditated murder could flee and be safe from the avenger of blood. And we don't have the time to go into all that. I'm going to read the passage here as our close. But basically, the first thing that happened in the city of refuge was the case was heard. And if the individual was judged guilty of the premeditated or presumptuous murder, he was denied harbor in the city of refuge, which meant he was out there where the avenger of blood could take the vengeance of Genesis 9 and verse 6. So I can't discuss that in detail, but what I did decide that I was going to do as a part of the close is we're going to go to Numbers chapter 35. This is a long passage. But we're going to read it because in it you see this in application by God, how God made the distinction and how he applied it. And so if you you can either follow me up on the screen or turn to Numbers chapter 35. And I'm going to begin reading in verse 6. The cities which you shall give to the Levites shall be the six cities of refuge, which you shall give for this manslayer to flee to, and in addition to them you shall give 42 cities. All the cities which you shall give to the Levites shall be 48 cities together with their pasture lands. And then down in verse 9 is where he begins to talk about the cities of refuge. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall select for yourself cities to be your cities of refuge, and the manslayer who has killed any person unintentionally may flee there. The city shall be to you as a refuge from the avenger, so that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation for trial. The cities which you are to give them shall be your six cities of refuge, and you shall give three cities across the Jordan and three cities in the land of Canaan. They are to be the cities of refuge. These six cities shall be for refuge for the sons of Israel, for the alien, and for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills a person unintentionally may flee there. But if he strikes him down," notice how all this, the distinctions start getting made here. "If he strikes him down with an iron object so that he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. If he strikes him down with a stone in the hand by which he will die, and as a result he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he struck him with a wooden object in the hand by which he might die, and as a result he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. The blood avenger himself shall put the murderer to death. He shall put him to death when he meets him. If he pushed him of hatred or threw something at him lying in wait, as a result he died. Or if he struck him down with his hand in enmity, and as a result he died, the one who struck him shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer. The blood avenger shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. But if he pushed him suddenly without enmity, or threw something at him without lying in wait," so you see, if they spontaneously got into a fight, and these things result, "or with any deadly object or stone, and without seeing it dropped on him, that is, so that he died while he was not his enemy, not seeking his injury. Then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the blood avenger according to these ordinances. The congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the blood avenger, and the congregation shall restore him to his city of refuge in which he fled, and he shall live in it until the death of the high priest who was anointed with the holy oil. But if the manslayer at any time goes beyond the border of his city of refuge to which he may flee, and the blood avenger finds him outside the border of his city of refuge, and the blood avenger kills the manslayer, he will not be guilty of blood, because he should have remained in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the manslayer shall return to the land of his possession. These things shall be a statutory ordinance for you throughout your generations in all your dwellings. If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death at the evidence of witnesses. But no person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Moreover, you shall not take ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. You shall not take ransom for him who has fled to the city of refuge, that he may return to live in the land before the death of the high priest. So you shall not pollute the land in which you are, for blood pollutes the land, and no expiation can be made for the land for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, the Lord, am dwelling in the midst of the sons of Israel." So we see these distinctions that were made here. Now, we normally take the time to look at the New Testament application, but I knew our time would already be gone. So just point out that in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus expanded the command that condemns murder to condemn the attitude of heart that would lead to murder. So there is no question that the sixth commandment is a part of the gospel as well, because Jesus clearly establishes that in the Sermon on the Mount. So I believe that the proper understanding of the sixth commandment is that it is a prohibition of individual action, and that there is no contradiction between that command and other occasions where God either permitted or commanded the taking of human life in circumstances that he had determined were appropriate. Brother Richard has the prayer, and then we'll go right into our Bible class this morning.